Order.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to welcome everybody to council today. We have an agenda circulated. Are there any additions or deletions from the agenda? I have an 8.2, a report from Councilor Frelick on the Nova Scotia Immigration Summit meeting that he attended yesterday. Are there other additions, deletions? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Moved by Councilor Fisk. Seconded by Councilor Fancy. Boy, it's flavor today. All in favor?
Frost.
It's unanimous. Thank you. The first item on the agenda is the report from the RCMP. Corporal Remnant, please come forward. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Worship.
Morning.
I rather like that chair. I can fit it. I don't think I can fit in this one anymore. We are slowing down from our summer months, finally. We had a rather busy summer. A lot of the numbers that spiked in July, August, and September were due to increased self-generated work, traffic enforcement, and other initiatives in relation to our detachment performance plans, trying to get more patrols up in the north area to combat the rash of B&Es that we've had there this spring. That initiative is continuing with a back roads patrol program running through November to target the hunting season and try to combat impaired driving and trespass and property offenses in the backcountry. Otherwise, a pretty standard month. Next month's report will be, I think, a bit more exciting. We did have an incident here last week at the high school that's being dealt with right now. But nothing outstanding on our plate, except for some internal issues with the new software rollout that's province-wide, and that continues to cause us a little bit of grief. But it won't affect our service delivery, it simply affects our records management.
Any questions? Yes.
Speaking of the northern end of the Cardiff country, are you running the same program as you land here with some education to the Cardiff government about like leaving things around instead of taking them home, you know, so that there isn't any bait for the rats?
Not so much, Mr. Waterman, because it didn't seem to be very successful last year. I mean, we invested a fair amount of time, effort, and finances in producing those pamphlets and getting them out there to the cottage owners. So there's only so much that we can expect the property owners to do. The other part of it is we have to be up there more visible and routinely in the area. It's a challenge, but we're recording our efforts in the area and the times that we spend in the North Country are increasing.
So. But like if there isn't any, especially on the big ticket items like the four-wheelers and boats and things, if they are taken home, then there's not a lot that, you know, that they should take.
Well, interestingly, that's not what's being taken. It's our analysts have been looking at this, and there's really no cut-and-dried MO to this. They're not big ticket items being taken. They're not flat screen TVs. They're not, you know, safe boxes. They're not ATVs. They're not boats. They're a lot of walk-ins and look-arounds, for lack of a better word. We'll see that they've been into the cottage. Things have been moved inside the cottage, but nothing of note has been taken. We've had a lot of those. Now, whether that's people looking for shelter in a harsh winter, possibly, but I don't think to the extent that we're seeing. So it's a strange one. I'll be quite honest with you, we don't have a grip on it yet, on the analysis part of it, on what kind of offender does this, because they're certainly not benefiting much from it.
Yeah. like a few years ago there, that it was quite organized, that they were taking the big ticket items. But that seemed to have gone away. Now I believe it's more local.
Yeah, well, knock wood. It hasn't been big ticket items lately, and there haven't been large recorded losses. It's just been mostly trespass type related offenses,
yeah.
But they are classified as breaking and entering.
Deputy Mayor
Norman. I noticed in September that it was the first month in a year that there were zero check stops, which the public probably liked. And but yet in September there were 97 other calls for service non-offenses.
I think, actually I saw that this morning as I was reviewing this just prior to the meeting. There were actually 49 check stops.
Oh, that's an error?
It's a typo. And then the 90 plus other calls for service are in addition to that.
So what would those be, other calls for service non-offenses? Hmm. Stuff you get called out for, but then they weren't offenses, or just social, or what, non-offenses?
I could generalize the answer to that. I don't know specifically because it's quite a large number. But other calls for service would be criminal records checks.
Okay.
Motor vehicle compliance inspection regulations. So somebody builds a new trailer and they need the VIN verified
okay.
by a police officer.
That kind of stuff.
We get quite a lot of them.
Thank you.
Councilor Frelick.
Just out of curiosity, do you get many complaints about Pleasant Avenue, which is the street when you exit the high school?
I would say no, because it doesn't ring a bell right now. I'm sure if I went back and checked RMS, I'd be able to give you a better answer.
Okay.
But no.
I've had lots of calls from people in that area that have had complaints, a lot to do with the paving, which has been done, but just the extreme amount of traffic in the buses. And when you come out of the high school, it should be a four-way stop. It's not, but lots of activity happening there that it'd be good to keep an eye on. So, and who is the traffic authority now? Is that you?
Staff Sergeant McDougall still is the traffic authority.
Still.
Any other questions?
Any updates, Corporal Brandon, on the senior safeties program that you know?
Yes, I thought that was included.
Oh, no, it is, for sure, but where it's headed funding-wise.
I could give you perhaps an answer there. I've had a letter from Lisa Tarr of VOM that is supporting or taking, is working actively on
yeah.
the sponsorship. They've asked for support. At this time, we'll look at it for next budget at the time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Corporal Brennan? If not, thank you very much indeed. You've got off Easter today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now I'd like to ask our friend Krista Harding to come forward, please. Update us on the climate study, which is very interesting. Is it suitable climate, Ray Sheep?
It is suitable climate. Yes, indeed. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to find the presentation. There we go. I'm going to just flip through a couple of slides about social opportunities. I think everyone at this point knows about social opportunities, but I always take an opportunity so that you can share with anyone that needs some help getting started in a business, particularly the financing piece in today's financing world. Social Opportunities is a local, nonprofit, not government organization. We're run by local business people, and we want to help people from when they first have an idea, whether it's an existing business or someone that wants to start a business, and that's an important piece. It's for startups and expansions. Just a little background that there are 13 of them in Nova Scotia. We're one of 13, so they're not all cookie cutters because they're all an independent nonprofit organization run by business people. It's like your municipality is different than the municipality in Lunenburg, for example. Our governance is based on the philosophies of our business people that sit around our table. Social Opportunities covers Lunenburg and Queens County and has done that for almost 22 years. I know, me too. There are 41 in the Atlantic provinces. And there are similar sorts of organizations right across Canada, just so that you know that in case you haven't happened to talk with other municipalities. There are similar sorts of organizations around. And there's a little bit on the bottom there about what, about some summary statistics. One little blurb that might be of interest to you is that small businesses account for over two-thirds of employment in five Canadian industry categories: non-institutional healthcare, forestry, important to us, other services, construction, accommodation, and food. And certainly those industries are areas that we often get asked to assist with. So we've had particular interest in the forestry in the last couple of years as people are trying to reinvent themselves with their woodlots, etc. And I heard an interesting piece on CBC this morning that they're going to have a chat out in Caledonia this evening about how to use your woodlots. They're trying to find a way to do that. Our strength is in our volunteer boards. The past year, just for a little information, the 13 CBDCs in Nova Scotia helped 474 businesses lent, and that's dispersed. That means we lent money. We don't give it away. We lend it. $25 million, and that created or maintained 1,200 jobs, and I'm going to anticipate that probably it was more maintaining than creating. That's the history that we've been having, and when I talk to other CBDCs, our results are very similar across Nova Scotia. And we helped people, the counseling piece, listened to people and gave them some suggestions to 3,100 people. Ourselves, we had 122 new inquiries, and there's the breakdown between Queens and Lunenburg. Our inquiries in Queens were down a little bit this year. Usually it's about 50-50. And our inquiries in general were down. We typically would have 150-plus new inquiries a year. However, we did get 30 loan applications for $1.7 million. Again, a little bit more in Queens than Lunenburg. It's fairly evenly split. We're better known, I guess, in Queens County because we've been around in Queens County longer, and it's a smaller community, so the word I think is more entrenched that we're there to help. We did commit 1.4 million of that 1.7 that was asked for, and as I mentioned a few minutes ago, most of it was for maintaining. We had, in the economy that we've had in the last year, there was a lot of help of businesses as they, sometimes it's as they want to reinvent themselves and try something new. So same employment, trying something different. And we counseled 242 clients. And when I say counsel, what I mean is we listen to them, we roll up our sleeves and help them as they're trying to do, particularly their financial plans for what they're going to do. We'll give them the guidance on where they should go to find out who their customers might be and their competition, but also we'll roll up our sleeves and say, okay, let's see if this is going to work for you on paper. So there's a little blurb. Some of the things that we do on a free basis, all very confidential, is we help people to start or expand and also deal with business difficulties. We often say we are sometimes seen as a business's best friend because they have someone that they can come in and talk to that's not related to their business necessarily, that can give them some honest and candid feedback and hook them up maybe with some solutions. Hands-on help and how to do a plan. Entrepreneurial training. We have we've all put a little bit of our money that aside to help people with improving their business management skills. We've seen in the past couple of years, I'm going to say five now, we're quite concerned about the lack of business management and entrepreneurial skills in individuals. That's why we're finding it difficult to lend to individuals, because we certainly can provide the hands-on assistance, but until people improve improve their business management skills, their potential for success is really at risk. So one of the things that all the CBDCs have done is that we have a little, very small program where we can help people if they identify a weakness in their business, then we can pay, and this is non-repayable, up to 90%, up to, we'll pay $1,800 towards getting someone in to train them in that skill. So we've done quite a bit of social media training in the past because that helps with marketing. In today's world, the social media part is important. And record keeping is another large one that we've helped with. So we will continue to do that in the next few years, and we've had quite a bit of uptake this year already. So there's that. And the other piece that we have is with the assistance of Atlantic Canada Opportunities Agency, access to a larger piece of help where if somebody wants to investigate a new idea or is having challenges in their business and they want an expert in a particular field to come in and look at that for them rather than them doing it themselves, but to get a little bit of feedback from someone else. Again, non-repayable, they can get up to 75%, up to $5,000 for someone to come in and help with that. We don't have as much money in that pot, but we certainly have done, I think this year already, we've done half a dozen of those this year. So it is a help. And the other one that has been around for a long time is through the province. There is a program where people can get some money to eat, basically, put food on the table. They get some personal income while they get their business up and running, and they get the benefit also of using a business officer for that counseling advice while they're doing it. But that is a help. Our loans that we do, there is no minimum. There's a maximum of $150,000. We have very flexible repayment terms because we often are sitting with those individuals and doing the cash flow so that the repayment is usually based on that thought. And the interest rate is a sliding scale and it's based on risk. And why you wanted me to come today, this is a climate study. This is year 2014, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not the scientist. I am the messenger. So don't ask me very tough questions on science, please, because I'm a business person. 2014 is a test year, and I expect when we see 2015's results that we're going to find that again, because this is 2014. 2015 winter was the challenging one, so we'll look forward to seeing those results next year. The scientists felt that this was very important to have a test year, and they've been waiting for it actually in the course of this because it puts things in perspective, so to speak. John Lewis from Perennial called it separating the wheat from the chaff. In other words, it's not good to have all good news. So what it did was it added confidence to sites that continue to perform well, which is encouraging. And overall, it was a test year for the frost-free period, the heat unit accumulation, and it had the lowest winter minimum temperatures of the study so far. High weather variability equates to higher risk, and I don't want to get too much into science, but standard deviation is a very important thing. And sometimes when we see results of climate studies that people have done, they don't talk about the variability. That's in general layman's terms. That's my understanding of the standard deviation. In other words, the highs and the lows. Sometimes we just see averages, and averages don't always help us when we have a crop in the field. And this morning, where I came from, it was -3.
It was -3?
Mm-hmm. Mm. As I was out feeding my sheep, and they were saying, the grass is all frozen.
You have the smartest sheep in the whole social.
That doesn't say much for sheep. Middlefield continues to be, there's a little results from Middlefield, but it gives you the example of how things have changed. Middlefield continues to be a bit of a shining light. Frost-free growing degree days, we're still, when they talk about wanting to grow grapes, for example, they use growing degree days over 900. So you can see that it has fairly standardly stayed that way. Sites that are, it is important to know that sites with winter minimum temperatures below minus 23 have a moderate risk threshold, and minus 26 is very high risk. There were 17 sites that they found this year that were below minus 23 and 4 sites below minus 26. And the that change that I talked about, the standard deviation associated with the coldest station in 8 of 10 corridors. So still notable that interior sites continue to perform well. L15 had winter minimum temperatures above the threshold. And the solar radiation, they haven't found much change in that in this last year, so they're waiting for the test year on that sunshine units in our lay terms. And they are still waiting for a test year on that. They're still waiting for fog. They've been waiting for fog since this has started, and they're really not finding, even this year they didn't find a lot of fog, so unusual. Maybe that's climate in general. precipitation was added, as we talked about last year, that they added a couple of things when we moved into this second couple of last years of this study, that they added them, so it's incomplete, but they did find that it is wetter here than it is in the valley. In summary, it was a test year for everything, the frost-free, the growing degree days, and the winter minimum temperatures. Many sites still appeared, that had appeared satisfactory, had dropped off the radar, but some of them still are showing good results. It's important to have the standard deviation and not rely exclusively on the long-term averages. I want to keep emphasizing that. Coastal sites and deep interior sites generally have the highest risk values, but there are notable exceptions. And one of the things that they're wondering about is, what are the geographic features? You know, scientists, they always want to know why deeper, which is really interesting to talk to them. And they're wondering, what are the geographic features that are allowing those sites that are staying good to be good? And they don't know that answer. They have found that generally, Southwest Nova Scotia still, even though it was a test year, that it is has comparable and in some cases superior climatic suitability for high value crops such as peaches, high bush blueberries and grapes to those areas in the Annapolis Valley, and that's a very generalized statement. It does depend on a lot of things, which I'll note in a moment. What are our climatic advantages? Two things in particular the interpreters of the data are saying, and that is that many areas have longer frost-free period, which means longer time that we can grow. I think this year we're going to see real results. We saw, for those of you that know me, know that I also am growing some grapes in Lindbergh County, and we saw frost on October the 19th this year, which is very early. So again, but generally longer frost-free period than which makes a longer growing season in the valley. And there are many areas with milder temperatures than the Annapolis Valley also. And the scientists, of course, are interested in that. And I'm often asked, well, what does that mean? So some examples of high-value crops that could benefit from longer growing seasons, in particular, and the milder winters, are grape varieties that are native to Europe, things like Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, day-neutral strawberries, and there's a fellow in Shelburne County that is having some success growing things in tunnels, and he is attributing that to this climate report, utilizing the climate report, and he's having some success by doing this. Day-neutral strawberries allow you to harvest them longer. Fall raspberries, thornless blackberries, late-season high-bush blueberries, and John Lewis of Perennia noted Colville, and cranberries, late season cranberry varieties. Some vegetables of interest might be strange, unusual things like sweet potatoes, artichokes, and this whole tunnel production system they're thinking might have some opportunity for us. It is important that we remember that it is not just temperature and sunshine alone that we have to consider. Every single location may have some differences, so it is important to look at individuals. These are generalized information. And also, it's important to check out the soil. It needs to have good internal drainage. It has to have good rooting depth. And there is a link, which I believe you have the presentation, so you can check it out, the two soil maps. And we've had this discussion before, that our soil information is dated. However, I just recently talked to Amy Sangster of Perennia, the soil specialist with Perennia, who, by the way, if anyone is interested, she does go to people's places and we'll help them look at that, just so you
Sorry,
know that. Sorry,
who does she work for?
Perennia.
Okay.
Perennia. It's another non-profit organization.
And where is she out of?
She is herself out of Truro, but she will come, I believe, this past week. She was just down in this area, so she will do that. But she always recommends that you go to the soil maps and check it out, the individual soil, because she says the basis of our soil is not, has not changed significantly. And again, the caution to check out your individual site, because microclimates change. It could change from this place to 700 yards down the road. There is an interactive website that you can go and look at the individual sites, and they'll show you the individual sites with the reports for each year. There is also a report for each of the past years on our link to off our website. We have a tab now just specifically for that. And I'm going to end by sharing with you that we wondered if people were actually using this information. And I guess about 3 or 4 weeks ago, a fellow walked in the door, basically, from Quebec, who has links to Queens County. That's as far as I'm going to go. And he said, I have read every single report since it came out, and I'm interested in doing something. He said, I'm getting a little older for doing it myself, but I might be interested in doing a collaboration with someone else. And he could rhyme off the hot spots from every single report all along. It was amazing and encouraging to know that people actually are using it, because sometimes we wonder. So, any questions? Non-scientific, please.
Susan, Councilor McLeod.
Krista, how do people know about your program through your research? How did this person discover it that you just said? With all that information.
I asked him that too, and he said he found it on our website.
How was he directed?
He stumbled. That's what I asked him.
Yeah.
He stumbled on it. I will say that right now, as a matter of fact, just yesterday, we awarded a contract because we are having what we call a LURE, L-U-R-E, website made to help people make decisions on things. That's how best way to summarize it. And it has a decision tree that was done by the marketing consultant that we hired for this past year, and he's done now. And that's going to be one piece of the website, so it will help you lead yourself off in different directions. Where do I want to go? Where do I want to go? What do I want to choose? And the other thing that we had been asked to have included on that is the links to the various industry help. For example, Perennia. It's a lot of people don't know when they're first starting to look at potential agriculture that there is this wonderful resource of scientific experts in a variety of fields, crop specialists, soil specialists, for example. So we're going to try and get as many of those links on that website, and then it will also link to that very scientific website where you click on a site and it will tell you the reports, because that's sometimes too scientific for people.
Being a library board member through my appointment with the council, libraries would be a great resource to get your information, because they do have more than just books. They do programs and they do these types of things for public information,
mm-hmm.
So it would be helpful. And they're everywhere.
Yes.
You know? So you might kind of contact them to get this information disseminated through their resources.
Very good point. And Department of Agriculture is another we're trying very hard to encourage the Department of Agriculture to take this up because we're done on June 2016. We're done with our participation in this. We hope that we have inspired a little bit of something in business and economic development, and we're hoping that Department of Agriculture will pick up the flag and show interest in continuing.
So that answered part of my question, your finish date. But it'd be wonderful if the study continued for 10, 15 years. So, municipalities help fund, various municipalities help fund this.
Mm-hmm.
How can we encourage the province of agriculture to continue with the monitoring program? I mean, those stations are bought and paid for. Who owns those? Like, what happens to the gear and the equipment?
That's right.
At the end.
Yeah, the intention is, and that's what we're looking for, someone to pick this up. And we are doing a formal ask to the Department of Agriculture ourselves. So I would suggest maybe letting the minister know that that you believe also that this is important would be useful.
So would you contact the municipal units that help fund this and ask for letters from us to support your document?
We could do that for sure. Thank you very much for the suggestion.
Councilor Waterman.
So, like on the small scale, if you own a piece of land, say in the country, and you don't want to make that real big $500,000 or $1 million step,
which
but,
is why
you would like to get into it gradually, like as a retirement. Or, you know, and build it up slowly. What would be the steps? Is there any help, or do you have to finance everything? I know the information there that you can use, but would there be a little startup cost or anything that the person could get? Or
lendable, for sure. There are a variety of sources that are really quite supportive with lending money to do those things. And there are also, with some of the lending programs, Mr. Waterman, there are also some non-repayable help to go along with it if you're a registered firm. And some examples that I'll give are, well, of course, we'll lend money to support something, or else we wouldn't have gotten into this project in the beginning if for a viable idea. Nova Scotia Farm Loan Board has been very supportive of agricultural development, new startups and expansions and trying new things. And they have linked with those through the Department of Agriculture a variety of programs such as Homegrown Success Program. And there are many, many programs underneath that. They're not large. They're small supports for individuals in a variety of different industries within that. And Farm Next program is a supportive program that also helps with particularly new farms going forward. And Farm Credit Corporation is another lender of that. And traditional banks have been looking at agriculture also. We've had quite a bit of interest from individuals exactly as you describe, that they see the unused land that we have in North Queens and middle to north Lunenburg County, and we are finding that people who maybe are working somewhere else are looking to also start to develop that land and use it again, which is quite encouraging.
Yes. So basically, probably the first good step that you could make would be to register it as a farm.
Yes.
And
it is encouraged to do that.
That gives you credibility.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that's not expensive, and you do that through the Department of Agriculture. And then you also will begin to be linked into the information systems, because there's a lot of information available through, there's an organization through the province has called Think Farm, and it really is about disseminating information on a variety of topics. And there's a lot of, they'll advertise a lot of workshops. For example, just started the beginning of October, and I hope they had enough people to get going, was the financial part of farming. They were offering in Lunenburg County at the library, I believe it was, the 6 or 8 week program for people to learn about the financial management of farming.
That's 25% of your work right there.
Yeah.
Usually.
Councilor Frederick.
Krista, can you just remind me again how this study initiated and who initiated and who were the partners? It's been a while since you...
Sure. There... A long time ago.
Yep.
The three CBDCs, SoSure, which is Queens, Lunenburg, Shelburne, and Yarmouth, we were commiserating the fact that we were having people come to our offices saying, I'd like to start this, I'd like to do that, and they really didn't have enough background information for if somebody wanted to borrow money from us about whether or not the thing that they wanted to do was suitable.
Okay.
And so it began, and we said, we looked around to see if anyone was in the process of doing something like this, which was accumulating some temperature and sunshine information in layperson's terms, and there wasn't, and we asked around if anyone had any intention of doing it, and they didn't, so we took a deep breath and said, okay, let's go see if other people would like to participate, and they did, including yourselves. You have been long-term participants in this. We had, this year, 8 municipalities, and please don't ask me to find them all off here right now because I don't have my cheat notes, but we had Atlantic Canada Opportunities was a big player. The provincial government through what used to be Rural and Economic Development and Tourism was another player. Department of Agriculture was a fairly small player. I'm going to forget some of them, but there were a lot of financial people, and that's what it took. We got quite frustrated in that when we were trying to put the project together, we were finding that we were running into the same problem that I'm sure businesses run into, which is these people have different rules than these people do, but eventually it all came together, and we're really quite thankful.
And you're happy with the way the report has gone, and you're happy with the results, kind of as you envisioned?
Yes.
Council Fancy.
For a lot of people starting out a new business, they really don't know what to do, right? I mean, a lot of ways they start doing something, and they kind of say, okay, I can't make this, so because I know a couple people in particular. I guess one of the first things they could come to you is that, because most of the time they are almost set up to fail because they don't know how to set up their financial statements and get everything all together. So if they wanted to come to you, they could come and say, look, I need help, and you will help them through that process?
For nothing.
For nothing, okay.
For nothing. That's our give back to the community. This organization is run by business people that are passionate about our community and that we should be able to have viable, thriving businesses, small businesses in our community, as well as large, but particularly small to medium-sized business in our community. And so we have very strong direction at a staff level that is very important, that to help people for nothing, to give them that guidance. And the reason that we think that that's important is because you can pay someone to go do a business plan for you, but you're the one who has to live it when you start that business. And if you do it, if you do the research, then you already understand your risks and you understand your challenges and how you're going to have to address them. And please do tell 2 people. We'd appreciate that.
I know one person in particular, they're into the business, and it may not be feasible the direction they're going, but coming to see you, they might be able to see.
Well, at least give them suggestions.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are painfully honest.
Okay, I'm going to have to end this one. Krista, thank you so much. Always interesting when you come, and we're very supportive of that climate study. It's excellent.
We appreciate it very much.
And
you've
I'd
been
like
right
to talk to you
start.
Some more about how you might help in retail and some ideas you might have there too.
In which?
Retail.
Retail?
Yeah, I'd like to come down and see you.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to invite Sally Steele and Neil Morehouse from Department of the Environment, Parks and Protected Areas. If you would, please.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
So we wanted to provide an update to councillors and those members of the public that are here on the Parks and Protected Areas Plan and some particular sites of interest. So why protected areas? There's all sorts of benefits to this, to protected areas. Not only do they protect the plants and animals and wild spaces, but they filter our air and purify our water. They act as benchmarks for science and provide spiritual and physical renewal. You know, it's like my mum says, you know, I just have to go out and stand under the gum trees and breathe in and just all the stress leaves my body. She says it's perfect, perfectly. They provide experiences with nature and support healthy recreation. They contribute to the local economies. And they leave a legacy for our children and our children's children. So we went through this Parks and Protected Areas Plan. It was a 5 years of conservation science, basically, that started with the Colin Stewart Forest Forum, and where five forestry companies got together with NGOs and came together, supported by government, to look at what Crown lands were there and which ones should be protected and which ones needed to be available for forestry. And then they basically presented that to the Premier. So from the start, we've worked hard to reduce conflict, and we wanted to look at the areas that were remote, that didn't have many roads, that were representative of the 80 different landscapes we have across Nova Scotia. So that's everything from the Cape Breton Highlands to Coffin Island just off Beach Meadows, which is one of the pending nature reserves in Queens County. We wanted those rich areas that we knew were good bang for our buck in terms of the plants and animals that were there. We wanted areas that protected rare species. We also added two other R's, restoration. So we knew there were a lot of there were some landscapes in Nova Scotia that had been highly modified by human use, and we needed to restore these, even though a lot of them had been, you know, heavily harvested, for example. And we also wanted areas that reconnect landscapes. So a good example of that is the pending Medway Lakes Wilderness Area, which I'll talk about in detail later, that connects the Tobiadic and Kedgy area across to Cloud Lake. And another good example is the isthmus between the New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. We know we need that, and it's important for the movement of wildlife. So we looked at all those. We looked at, you know, providing the social and economic benefits. And we shaped our boundaries to maximize access points where we knew recreation was appropriate, human use. And we also wanted to promote healthy recreation opportunities, and that helped in the selection of some of these sites. We knew that mills were having challenges, so we supported the mills by protecting lands and also securing lands for forestry. We also worked closely with mineral exploration companies and identified mineral interests that were tracking towards development. And we created a new category called potential protection. So these are areas of high ecological value, but they had existing potential mineral rights. So we know we can protect these areas over time if the mineral rights are no longer present. And we managed to avoid 98% of those rights, and of the remaining 2%, over half of that is under potential protection. As far as trails, we worked with ATVANS and SANS to minimise impact on regional connector routes and designed areas to avoid trails that are important to Nova Scotians. And we had a broad consultation. It was over 3 years of talking to our stakeholders and partners, and it was longer with the Mi'kmaq. That's giving you some of the background. So just so you know, there's five different categories that count towards protection in our plan, and that's going to bring us up to about just over 13% of Nova Scotia's land base. The national parks are all known and loved by everyone and include Kedgy-Mikuji National Park. The land trusts and easements mostly relate to private land, and organisations like the Nature Conservancy of Canada and the Nova Scotia Nature Trust protect those. Certain provincial parks that have conservation within their mandate count towards protection, not so much the small sort of roadside picnic areas, but some of the larger ones. Nature reserves, these protect the outstanding and unique natural features and offer our highest level of protection. And then wilderness areas, which make up the bulk of the area, and these are typically larger and protect biodiversity at that landscape level. A good example of that, of course, is the Tobiadic, which has over 100,000 hectares. So that table is translated here in a graph, and you can see that the blue is the existing wilderness areas and nature reserves, provincial parks, and so on. And then the red is going to be the areas protected under the plan. And then the green is just that potential protection that I was referring to. So just to give you a little snapshot of the distribution of this land by county, I've broken it out for you here in this table. And this is dependent on the size of the Crown land in each municipality. So Kings, for example, you can see has a much smaller area of Crown land than Antigonish. And the major portion of the western counties relates to the Tobiadic and Kejimkujji. And you'll note that the blue portion of the graph, which is the majority of it, is not protected. So that's to look at that on a map. Before the plan, we had 9.3% protected, and with the plan, you can see bring us up over to 13%. And just for your interest, we do have an online map, and it's not going to work, of course. Yeah, that's, maybe it will. It's available to the public, and it's really easy to use. And I don't know why that won't work, but anyway, you can zoom into different areas and look at why we're protecting them and see what's in your backyard. So I want to talk about a couple of those specific sites. I know questions have come to council about Medway Lakes Wilderness Area. This is about just over 19,000 hectares and is off Highway 8, just near Milford House, if you're familiar with that area. And it's going to be 20% of the former Bowater land in that area. 80% is going to be open for multiple resource use. And just to give you that in terms of province-wide, only 12% of the former Bowater land is going to be protected. But we knew this area was really special, and we knew we wanted to provide that connection across landscapes that I mentioned. We also wanted to protect the headwaters of the Mersey and the Medway, because we know the headwaters are really important for fish and for the water quality of these rivers. We also knew that the Bowater foresters had the foresight to protect some old forest in this area, and so this area is particularly rich in biodiversity. And in addition to that, we knew there were historic canoe routes in this area that we wanted to maintain and restore, and they're outlined in this dotted line here. And so with the plan, this area was announced, and then about a month ago, government decided or proposed that, in addition to what was offered in the plan, that these roads in green would be open, and this West Branch Road that was previously going to be closed is going to be open for all vehicular access. So that'll mean the public and also forestry can access these roads in green, as well as 18 different access points, which are the check marks, because we knew that people want to be able to enjoy these areas, and that it was important for local industry and the Mersey River Chalets and Milford House in terms of promoting sustainable tourism. And then Carter's Beach, which is near and dear to many of you here, of course. So it's a high-profile and much-loved beach. We we wanted to provide an update. I presented to council a couple of years back about it, and we'd had two community meetings and undertook a beach user survey back in 2014. And we heard from the community, and they identified a number of issues which we were aware of as well, including the parking, and that visitation's increasing and parking's an issue, and often cars are backed up along Carter's Beach Road and blocking driveways, and that was also access to the beach needed to be improved. There were litter issues. People were using the woods as a lavatory, and so we put our heads together and tried to come up with a solution that balances the ecological protection of this really sensitive site with the human use. And it's a really tricky problem. And there were diverse views on how to manage it. So what we've come up with is formalising a walking trail down to the beach. We're going to realign the existing parking area at the end of Carter's Beach and basically keep it within the same footprint as it is now, but also include a safe turnaround, because we know that whether we make it for 9 cars or 20 or 25 cars, it's still not going to accommodate the 80 to 120 cars that are coming down that road during the summer. We're going to look into a summer student so that we have a friendly face there at the start of the beach greeting people and saying, look, this is a sensitive site, welcome it. You know, this is how it is. So, and we invite you for short stays and pack in and pack out your litter. And then we'll have interpretive panels there, which are friendly and talk about the ecological values. And so we're gonna work with that as sort of our first step. And we want to work with the community. We know there's a lot of interested people there who care about this beach and who want to be stewards, and with partners such as the municipality. So that's part of why we're here today, is to you know, open that up. So that's it for my presentation.
Can you maybe take some questions, would you?
Certainly.
Councillor Waterman.
In the Medway area, there are some contractors that have agreements for acquiring sand up in that area. Now, will those contracts still be in effect?
Yeah, so Department of Natural Resources would oversee that. That's outside of our mandate. However, it's my understanding that where they get the aggregate and the sand is outside of the pending wilderness area. Natural Resources could speak to that specifically, but my understanding is that wouldn't be impacted by the Medway Lakes Wilderness Area.
Councillor Fancy.
You had mentioned up by, I guess the area you're referring to there is up by Milford House. There's 12% is protected land, right?
Of the former Bowater land province-wide, is 12% is going to be protected. But we knew the Medway was a special area and there's lots of values that I mentioned. And so roughly about 20% of the former Bowater land in that area is going to be under the Medway Lakes Wilderness Area, and 80% will be open for multiple resource use.
And the roads, I see where the one went up through, that's now going to be open. Now, for people who are doing still back in, say, woodlands work and such, they'd be able to use those roads? Or is that just for public transport, or do they have to have their own? I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah, so the roads in green under the current government proposal, and there's still decisions being made about final boundaries and so on, that those roads would be open for all vehicles. And the gates in that area are going to be open. And so overall 90% of the roads will be open for vehicle use. So that's a big change from, you know, when Bowater had it and people weren't meant to go into that area at all. So, yeah. Or there was very limited access.
Councillor Clark.
When you were talking about Carter's Beach, I didn't hear you say that they were going to install laboratories for the future. Is that true? Or
So that's been one of the
challenges.
Yeah, one of the challenges and one of our concerns about having lavatories there is that people will stay longer and more people will come. So what we want to do is we want to trial this approach. Mm-hmm. We want to get a summer student. We want to realign the parking area and get the interpretive signage up and see how it goes. But we are open to looking into the possibility of an outhouse. But we don't have staff or the resources to necessarily keep it maintained. And so, you know, that's a conversation that we would be open to having with the municipality, you know, down the track. So.
Seems like that was one of the problems that was identified when you were looking at it.
Yeah.
But yet you haven't done anything to address it, so it's just curious
about
that.
So it's been a conscious decision.
And the summer student will probably appreciate some place to go.
Yeah. And it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. Because
yes.
We know that if we put the facility, if you build it, they will come. You know, and we already know that we're having increased visitation and there's got to be some way that we can manage that. So.
But I'll pass it off to Darlene, who probably...
Yeah, he's putting a hand up. I know, I see.
And it's not if you build it, they'll come because they just go there, whether you build it or not. And I noticed Brian Fisher in the audience, and along with Carter's, we all have to be reminded that Spectacle Island is also part of this,
right.
And the Spectacle Light Society has a lot to think of, you know, when you say student, I really hope that by next summer that changes to plural. And it's
mm-hmm.
students.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need, if you're going to educate people about Carter's and about short stay, then you need a presence there from daylight to dark.
Mm-hmm.
Not a student who will be there for 5 days and then on. But, you know, and then off on weekends and whatever. Because you need to have that presence for rain days and Sundays. what I found really disheartening, and our CEO and the mayor and I went and met with the minister, and that is the continual publications of materials. And while one cannot control what one writes, I was when a book, as you were aware, was published on beaches of Nova Scotia at before summer. You know, a lot of publication, you know, and that book came out of a staffer who works with Department of Environment, direct influence to the minister, and the only beach mentioned in Queens County was Carter's.
Mm.
Was Carter's.
Mm.
You know, I find that, and maybe the person did it before he was in the role he was. You know, that's what we probably guessed. However, not taking staffers to heart, but yet we have incredible beaches that should be in Beaches of Nova Scotia books, like Kedgy Seaside, one of the most incredible beaches there are in this province.
Mm-hmm.
And we listened to the minister who spoke about environment is not a parks department, you know, suggested, are you going to be a protected beach or are you going to be a park? And I know that's a fine line. And it is a huge problem. The whole garbage issue is another issue. I had always been of the opinion, I had heard through your department, if you take a garbage can out, then people won't leave your garbage. And I thought, well, I don't. But then our CAO, Richard, is aware of an area that had a garbage problem, and they took the garbage can out, and people stopped leaving garbage because there was no garbage can.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
When you put a garbage can, then that means people will be here to pick up garbage. So if it's one garbage can, people will overflow it because they assume somebody's going to come and clean it up. So are you going to do the no garbage can, or are you going to do garbage cans and have them checked on a regular basis? What's the plan is for garbage cans for next year?
So as you know, DNR have been emptying it this summer.
Not very
as
well.
Much as the, yeah, well.
No. I mean, I can attest to what I've known from local people, and DNR will say when the garbage can becomes 8 bags of garbage that local people have picked up and bagged, it's not our responsibility, and we'll do it when we have time. So DNR are not doing that.
Well, I think they got better as the summer went on, and they were emptying it at least twice a week. So so anyway, the plan is that once we get the interpretive panels in, we're going to message to pack in the garbage and pack it out. When we undertook the speech user survey, 100% of the people that we spoke to said they'd be willing to do that. So given the research that if you do take the garbage can away, that people don't litter, and given the willingness of the visitors to pack it in and pack it out, that's what we're going to trial. You're right, Spectacle Island's an important part of the pending nature reserve, and one of the interpretive panels we're planning is to go out to the island, and Robert and Brian have given us some wording about, potential wording and background about that and the history of the lighthouse. You made a good point about the students. I agree, we're going to need them for weekends and for, as long a day as possible. All good points. Thank you, Don.
Ms. Steele, the Deputy Mayor has mentioned, we went to see the Minister. I can honestly say that in the 3 years that I've sat in this chair, that was probably the least satisfactory meeting I've had with a Minister of the Crown. There is a significant problem to keep that gardens. And when we're told that people, if they need to go to the, if they need to empty themselves, to drive down Port Matoon Wharf, which is, what, about 3 miles away, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We did propose, and I heard in that you mention or allude to it, so I'm going to pick up on it. We did propose a joint committee to see if we could work together to find solutions. We had done this back in 1996, 7, 8 with the Thomas Reddell Park, and we worked closely with government on that. In fact, the committee still exists. It probably doesn't need to, but it does exist. And we were able to get the park open, and it was satisfactory to everybody. We proposed such a committee, and it didn't fall on very fertile ground, that particular seed. But I heard you saying that you would work with the municipality, and if that's the case, we'd welcome that opportunity. We'd welcome both Brian and Robert are here today, we'd hope it would have local representation. I can visualize and the CAO will probably castigate me after saying this, but I can see us helping to some extent with the cost or with the construction, because it's a huge problem. I mean, you mentioned 80 to 100 cars. I hear one day there was 147 cars out there. I hear two, that one of them got ticketed and got fined $448 or whatever the number is, and we don't want people to get fined in Queens for coming to see Queens. We want them to come. We want to put out welcome mats and not penalize them. So I really, and it's our intention, because I understand there's a shared jurisdiction here with natural resources. It's our intention to meet the minister. I've already put out feelers. He's off at the present time. So when he's back in the new year, we certainly intend to have that meeting. But I would encourage government to think about this joint committee, see if we can, by putting our heads together, alleviate the problems for the people who live there, maximize the benefit to the environment, maximize the benefit to visitors to the beaches, and so on. So I do know that three heads are better than one, and five are better than three. So take us up on that, and we will be pushing government for that. Because a lot of the solutions that we were told of at that meeting with the minister really don't make a lot of sense. I mean, you don't go 3 miles when you gotta go. However, I cautioned myself before you came not to shoot the messenger. I think I may have not listened to my warning, but I'm sorry if I hopped on a soapbox. It is a big problem. We want to work with you to resolve it. And thank you for coming. It's not easy to come when you think you might be walking to the lion's den. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Up in the Medway, would it be possible for a group to, like, put in a picnic area, like a Shenley Lake, and apparently that's a really nice beach.
Stunning beach.
You know, that way it's organized and people would go there instead of, if they want to stop for, you know, everywhere, they could just go to that one area and then it would be more controlled.
Yeah.
Would it be possible?
Yeah.
Like, if a group really looked after it and built it and, like, volunteered their time and things?
So, well, I can't speak specifically to Hendry Lake. What I can say is that we're very interested in working with groups in that area to co-manage trails, for example, and we're meeting with SANS and the local Crossburn Snowmobile Club this week, for example, and looking at their interests in the area. So we're open to that, and you know, we're open to where those check marks are on the map, you know, that they're access points under the current plan. But we're making the decisions about this area and the final boundaries sort of as we speak. So certainly, you know, I can take that back to our manager
like
and
you
can
control places that they
can
stop and have a break. It'll be better than just stopping everywhere. You know?
That's right. Yeah, and it's finding that balance between motorized access and the canoe routes as well, because if you paddle for 3 days and you want a wilderness experience, you know, it's going to impact that when, you know, there's a bunch of ATVs are showing up at the same sort of area. So it's just balancing those various uses of the area
Thank you. Susan, last question.
Sally, you mentioned that Coffin Island was a pending protected area.
Yeah.
What do you really mean by that?
It's going to be a nature reserve, and so that'll be designated in early 2016.
So is there consultation with the society, with the people that own property on there and that sort of thing? How is that done?
I'm aware of that, although I wasn't sure the society was still active or not.
Well, they may not be, but I know that there's still some interest.
Okay.
Into the island.
Perhaps I'll give you my card, because I haven't been able to find a contact.
Okay. Sure.
Well, I can give you the contact. The person who used to be the 2IC, the chair of the committee, is dead, but the number two is Thomas Radall, the third. He's a dentist in town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Blair, is
he? No, Thomas.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I just so you know, that link didn't work for me during the presentation, but if you just Google Parks and Protected Areas Plan and click on our interactive map, you'll see the pending areas in Crosshatch, and the nature reserves are in orange, and this is Coffin Island, for example. The wilderness areas are in green. So it's a really easy to use tool. You can you can put the aerial photographs on. You can click on and see the crown land in addition to the pending areas. And so it's just a really easy to use tool that's there for the public. So just wanted to make you aware of that. All of Coffin Island? Almost all of it.
Yeah, I can't believe the lighthouse end.
Well, a third of it was owned by the federal government. And
yeah, that's correct.
Yeah,
with the lighthouse there at the end.
Two-thirds by the province.
Yes, that's correct. Anyway, I know we're probably out of time, but I could talk about this all day.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm sure if you happen to go back into the gallery, there are a couple of people there who would want to bend your ears some more. I'm four on the agenda. The tabling of petitions. Are there any petitions to be tabled? Item five is an opportunity for any member of the public to ask any question that would like, if you'd like information on any comments, whatever. So any, all we ask is that you give your name, an address, and civic address, that is, and we try and limit it to about 5 minutes. Is there anybody, any member of the public who would like to raise any points with us?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, John Robertson, College Junior, Liverpool. A couple of comments and a question. Looking at the financial statement, things must be in order with respect to expenses and so on.
I can't hear, I'm sorry.
Pardon?
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I say with respect to looking at your financial report, the
okay.
Period, it looks to be the expenses are right on pretty well for around the 50% mark. Things look very well there. Just want to make that as a comment. I noticed you're reading in the press and so on that you were a member or are a member of the Agricultural Society of Fish Farming on that particular committee. And I noticed the information in the press yesterday, and it's mentioned, I believe, on TV as well, with respect to the new regulations, coming out with respect to fish farming. And I'm just wondering, having been on the committee, I know there's been problems in the past with the one it's called, and are these regulations going to address the problems that that have been sitting there in the past by the public and your knowledge of being on the committee?
I'm very optimistic that we will certainly see improvements insofar as that fish farm is concerned in Port Mattoon Bay.
Regulations, you feel will take care of a lot.
I am optimistic that under the new regulations there will be an opportunity to improve that situation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Is there anybody else who'd like to address council? Yes, Mr. Dagley.
Thank you, Mayor Clark. David Dagley, 9 Metapon Road, Liverpool. I was very impressed with the two presentations today, specifically on the climate study as well as the parks and protected areas. I'm hopeful that the Region of Queens and Provincial Environment will be able to work together to resolve the privy issue at Carter's Beach. I'm sure it's a hot topic, and I look forward to seeing what materializes from that. Hopefully the region will also be able to market the wilderness area program and those opportunities for tourists to come and do wilderness recreation. I think there is a possibility of increased economic development in the region because of that. It's certainly good for the wildlife habitat and such, and we need to also ensure that it's an economic factor. I wanted to bring to your attention the fact that when one arrives in Liverpool from 103, near the Irving Superstore intersection, and you look for Mercy Point Western Head directions, one sees nothing. When you come up across the town bridge to the corner by the post office, one still sees no direction signs. However, if you're coming down Main Street from the town hall, Old Town Hall, and you look up, you will see a sign that says Mercy Point Western Head straight ahead, which is great. When you travel down Main Street past the museum, there are no signs that I could find that said Mercy Point Western Head turn right. So I've had people stop me on the street and say, where do I go to get to Mercy Point Western Head? So I give them the directions to the best of my ability. But I think when you're looking at your signage issues, you may want to look at resolving that issue to make it easier for tourists to go that route. A lot of people like to do the loop around Mercy Point Western Head. It keeps people in the area longer and certainly better for tourism. So hopefully there's an easy solution to that.
We'll look into that. Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to address council? If not, then I'm continuing through the agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last council meeting, which was on October 13th. Moved by Councilor Waterman, seconded by Councilor Inglis. All in favor? It's unanimous, and thank you. There's nothing under dangerous on site the premises this time. I'd ask Jill to come forward and give her report on the economic development. Then we'll ask Councilor Frelick for his update on the immigration.
Good morning, everyone. Just go through the highlights of the report this month. In terms of business assistance, we've worked with 17 businesses this month and done 13 business visits, including to some of the new businesses and to the North Queens area. The Rural Internet Project is continuing to look into solutions to the high-speed problem in our rural area, and there are some technical and cost issues that are being come across with all of the solutions so far, but we're continuing to develop a paper on that and trying to overcome as many obstacles and explore as many opportunities as we can. There was a meeting in Newcombville in Lunenburg County where there were details given of a provincial consultative exercise that's going on, so they're also actively looking at possible solutions and going to make recommendations, probably not until the spring. Just following up on the climate data study presentation that Krista made, staff attended a session that looked at potential uses of the climate data, and some interesting initiatives came out of that. And we are looking at a repeat of the Agriculture Day that has been held the last 2 years in March 2016 and hosting it here in Queens. And just also building on what Krista said about investment, lending opportunities for agricultural businesses, we're helping FarmWorks, who are an agricultural investment co-op, to host a couple of meetings in Queens County. One is going to be held at White Point on November the 5th at 2 o'clock, and the other at the North Queens Business Hub on the November the 6th at 12 noon. So we hope that folks who are looking at either opening or expanding an agricultural-related business will come out to those sessions and learn more about what FarmWorks has to offer. And just a reminder, they don't only just look at farming businesses, but they look at processing of local produce. So, for instance, the Port Grocer was a recipient of FarmWorks funding and has continued to thrive because of that. On the North Queens Business Hub and Innovation Centre, it's quite exciting that it's now open and operating. It was used for the election, and there continue to be bookings and an interest in using the facilities. And they're not going to have the opening ceremony officially for the Fire Hall and the Business Hub until things settle down a bit after the election, and those sort of things can be organised. But it certainly is something to celebrate in our community that has come to fruition and is a great credit to all who worked on it.
They had a very successful dinner out there the other night. I don't know how many people were there. Peter, do you know? We
did hear the doctor.
Up around 200, I would have thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe more.
Dinner theater.
Full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on, the Highway 103 signage, the new piece of highway near Port Jolly is open, and we've played a role in working with transportation infrastructure to ensure that the partners involved in signage, the Thomas Riddell Park DNR and Parks Canada for Kedgeree Seaside, you know, were able to get their signage installed as the road was being built, so that you know, it's cheaper that way to get it done as construction taking place. We're also working on the next piece, which will be the Port Tomb bypass. So that's going to be the new exit 21. Also to make sure representation is made about business symbols and activities that are there for visitors, so they know what's at that exit. The South Shore Tourism team staff attended the partners meeting on October the 14th at the Black Loyalist Heritage Centre, and there's going to be a follow-up meeting on December the 2nd at the Best Western Plus in Liverpool from 1 to 3. So they're seeking feedback from partners on the 2016 season and also looking ahead to future activities that the tourism team may get involved with, bearing in mind that the Wren is, you know, sort of still in its formative stage, and you know, there's going to be still some kind of lag in marketing activity until that gets going. Our Management Without Borders submission was successful for phase two of our project to promote Route 8 for adventure tourism, and we had our staff do some surveys of visitors, which is kind of feeding into that project. So they're up and running, they're providing updates. It's just a small project, it's a small time frame they have to actually do the work, but it's not costing us anything, and they seem to be a very engaged multidisciplinary team that we have working on this, and they'll be delivering their project to us in early December. I just do a plug for the Lunenburg Queen's Business Excellence Awards. It's time again to nominate businesses in the various categories. The link is there. It's really easy to nominate businesses. Businesses can nominate themselves. It's just a matter of inputting their contact information. It's not that you have to write a whole piece to justify your nomination. You just input that contact information. So it'd be great to see a lot of Queen's County businesses up for awards, as there were for last year. And the nominations close at the end of November. We had another Mersey Forum event on October the 13th. That was concerning tidal energy in Nova Scotia. It was really, really interesting, great speakers, and you know, their main point was that the whole of Nova Scotia can benefit from this industry because the suppliers to those companies investing in that different technology there, you know, could be located anywhere, and where possible they are sourcing their components from within Nova Scotia. There is another event scheduled for November the 10th. That's on the future of electric and hybrid propulsion for boats, and that includes all kinds of boats, including lobster boats, and will be quite a good event as well. Sue Malloy, who's the speaker, is really ahead in that field, and so it should be another interesting evening. Tonight, just to build on something Krista mentioned, there is a public information and consultation event with private woodlot owners and public from 7 to 9 at the Fire Hall in Caledonia, and it's to talk about, to make woodlot owners aware of the resources that are available to them, but also to get an idea on what their needs are. And the event is being hosted by a new group called the West Nova Woodlot Services. And they are funded by DNR, Department of Natural Resources, and are a combination of other organizations like the Mersey Tobiatic Research Institute, the Federation of Woodlot Owners, La Forêt Acadienne, and the Nova Scotia Woodlot Owners and Operators Association. So anybody interested in woodlots and opportunities for woodlot owners would be well advised to attend that. There are other sessions in New Germany and around the area, but that one is the only one that's going to be in Queens. On visitor services, our September numbers were strong, which was good news, and the facilities now, Fort Point, the two VICs in Queens are closed now, and we'll be assembling all the data and sort of doing a end of the tourism season report probably in December once Thailand conference has happened and incorporating learning from that as well.
Questions of Joe? Councillor Frelick and Councillor Malone.
Joe, you mentioned that the VICs were closed. We still have a place in town. I know at Queen's Place we have a rack.
Mm-hmm.
Is there other places in town that people can get information?
Yes, indeed. Jackie does circulate leftover brochures, especially the time-sensitive ones, Doers and Dreamers, and Our Guides, etc., to places like Queen's County Museum and some of the accommodations. So there's other places around that are still seeing visitors, so even though those places are closed, that can get information.
And
of course,
Queen's,
here.
And the one at Queen's Place is, they keep that up to date themselves? At the end of the season, they bring in?
Yes, I think it's a combination staff effort with the staff at Queen's Place and ourselves that, you know, kind of keep that topped up.
Okay. Yeah. Nice to see that there.
Yeah.
A lot of people appreciate that.
Yep.
So there has been discussion, excuse me, of doing something similar in the town hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
okay.
My suggestion.
And maybe I'll just leave that there because I see your heads nodding. And
we'll do it.
Yeah. Sorry, who wanted to get in there? Deputy Mayor Norman, sorry. Thank you.
The signage thing for Port Jolly that Richard worked on was very important. And even though there's no businesses there that benefit, as a benefit to Queen County is huge, and to think that it took the municipality to get the province and the feds to get that sign up before the season starts next summer rather than next summer. The Port Mattoon one will be different in that there are so many businesses that are now asking me about signage and whatever, and I just sent a note off to Richard this morning, ceasing another person who's asked. And that's going to be a different kettle of fish because you're going to, you know, you've got so many private individuals concerned about signage on that 100.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got the quarterdeck and the White Point that can afford to pay for their name and lights, basically, because they meet the tourism threshold and they've got the thousands of dollars, you know, but then you've got all the small cottages through Hunts Point and Somerville and Port Mattoon and with so many restrictions on that 100. So good luck on that one, Richard. I don't know if there's agency, liquor, you know, there's just, that's going to be a whole new ball game with that, with one exit now. And the way they're moving on that road, I'm thinking they may have that open by summer. Boy, are they moving fast over there. It may be later, but I think, you know, the signage matters. It's going to be a tough one for there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Councilor McLeod.
Jill, probably this was one of your hats and your business assistants and the new business is opening up. But yesterday I stopped in to have a chat with Celeste Martin. She's opening up the new hair salon and spa in her location where Fiore Botanica mm-hmm. used to be on Main Street. She's doing a wonderful job in there and very aggressive with the renovation.
Oh, okay.
And she's also become part of a new initiative with waste products mm-hmm. from hairstyling salons. Yep. And that's a real bonus for her. It's wonderful to have her think about the environment as well as being involved in opening up a new business.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good to have that on Main Street.
Yes. And thanks for mentioning Celeste because that is a very exciting new business that started. It isn't reflected in my report because my report finished on October the 15th.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It'll pick up with her soon. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Councillor Fancy, and then the CAO would like to get into the Councillor Fancy first.
With the Caledonia VIC, we see a great increase of people who pass through. Do we see is that translated into the park? Do we see that the park has had a lot more visitors this year? Where do we see the trend? Is it stopped there? Are we seeing this people passing through? I just wonder where this has gone to and where it's going to.
Well, I'll have to check in on the KG stats to see how they're looking this year. That will sort of probably be part of our report when we look at the overall season. But it's interesting to know, you know, that they have an increase. I know they get a lot of the cottage country folks, you know, maybe from Germany or from wherever, do call in, especially when they have people visiting and they're common visitors. Obviously the park, I mean, I've been aware of a lot of, every time I'm on Route 8, there's a lot of RV traffic this year, but I haven't seen the numbers yet, but I'll certainly look into that.
And I've seen the same thing, because I go to Caledonia quite often, and I also see where the Liberal government's talking about maybe putting more into the park, so you might see extended time, which would be great again.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we got that political plug in for the morning, now we'll move on. Anybody else? Oh, Richard, you're next.
Just very briefly, just on the Mersey Forum, I had the opportunity to attend the last session that Jill and them had arranged. It was a packed room. One of the ideas that came up during the session, which Jill's acted on, is it's a great opportunity to engage and inspire youth in our community. So Jill's reached out to the, sorry to put you out there, Jill's reached out to the school principal who's excited about it, but I would encourage if Jill's pushing these out to encourage any of the youth. For example, in the title presentation, you know, we learned that there's residents in Queens that are, you know, able to do work from home doing design and controls or sensors. I wasn't sure quite what it is. So there's a lot of good opportunities to really inspire people to do technical work, design work, engineering work, and able to stay in their community and do that. And so it can spark some imagination and things like that. So just share that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any more questions of Jill? If not, Councillor Prelick, the floor is yours.